Hello and welcome to the podcast. This is Get in the Driver's Seat. We're telling stories about leadership moments in small to mid-sized professional practices. I'm your host, Sandra Beckor, Practice Management Coach at Beckor Management. I'm excited to introduce our guest today, Gina Alexandris, founder and chief enthusiasm officer at her coaching and consulting firm. Gina is a trained and certified coach, educator, and former lawyer. Her various professional roles include Senior Director, Law Practice Program, Special Advisor for the development and launch of an ongoing instructor of the Emotional and Cultural Intelligence Intensive course at the Lincoln Alexander School of Law, Assistant Dean, Student Services, and Founder and Director of Career Services at Osgoode Hall Law School, and Associate in a Civil Litigation and Family Law Practice. Tongue twisters in there.
Sorry about that, Sandra.
Welcome, Gina.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be here for our conversation today.
Me too. And so, Gina, I was looking up the date when we first met. We were paired together to appear as guests on NCA Network's podcast.
When was that?
It was almost exactly a year ago today.
Wow.
Happy friendversary.
Happy friendversary. So exciting. And so grateful for that pairing up back then.
Yeah, that was great. It was a fun conversation about managing up for anyone who hasn't seen it, how lawyers can proactively manage those around them, including their supervisors, so that they add more value to their team. But our theme today is about professional and career coaches and how they can play a role in supporting clients with decisions, change, and leadership. And everybody, you know, who's into sports, not me, sorry, but if you're into hockey, baseball, football, the fans, you get the role of the coach. You understand intuitively what they add. But this type of coaching is behind the scenes. You don't watch it on a big screen. It's abstract and it's off the record. So today we're going to make that a bit more accessible to you through stories about arriving at aha moments. And I credit Oprah for that. Sorry. Aha moments. Big or small, individual or group. And we're going to talk about it. So Gina, why don't you kick it off with an explainer of one of your cool tools, the DISC.
Absolutely. So thanks again. And what I think, Sandra, that I just wanted to start by, before I start on the DISC in particular, is just to say that in terms of coaching, what I find, I was a soccer mom. My son was a soccer player for the longest time. And I had a vision of what coaching can do in an athletic capacity, as you said. But then I've also been the recipient of coaching long before I became a coach. And the benefit was, for me at least, to be able to get past those barriers or past those challenges, and not necessarily like the coaches in sports who are more directive and tell you what to do. You know, you've got to run those laps, or you've got to do that defensive tackle, or whatever the we're going to run amok with a sports analogy, so let's just stop it right there. But, you know, do X or Y, Z. Really, in coaching, it's getting people to sort of think about things on their own, getting people to feel comfortable with that discomfort that comes up from not knowing what's next, getting people to really, the language that I love from our coaching federation that I'm a part of is unlocking previously untapped sources of imagination, productivity, and leadership, and to be able to use various tools that we're going to talk about now to be able to get to that unlocking and seeing a different perspective, seeing a different sight. So in terms of one of the tools you talked about, because aha moments are beautiful when they happen. And I just want to say, you and I had this conversation a little while ago. They don't always happen. That means not always right away. They don't always happen at each session, for sure. But when they do happen, they're beautiful for the individual client, as well as for the coach, because it really is wonderful to see the transformation, to see that shift in perspective. I'm going to go talk about the DISC, but anything that you want to sort of say at the beginning, Sandra, just in terms of those aha moments and when they happen, how they happen, and that feeling that you would get as a coach on those aha moments?
Oh, I think it's incredible when it happens because I almost can see it visually. It's a crazy thing. If I'm coaching a group of people and something happens, something changes in their understanding of each other, I literally can see them transform in front of my eyes. It's like something clicks and they look different, they talk different, something just changed and it's never going to go back.
It's beautiful. It's a beautiful
It's
thing, right?
beautiful.
It really is a beautiful thing. And so we're talking about some of the things that you can experience during a coaching session, just to give it some, as you said, to put a story and an explanation behind it. So one of the tools that I use is the DISC tool. It is a there's so many different assessment tools or personality tools that you can engage with. And as a coach, I made the decision I had been offered that tool for myself, and I found a lot of use from it. And it was really something helpful for me as I thought about some clients. I will use it sometimes, not all the times. And a lot of it is some of the aha moments actually happen as you're taking the assessment, because there's a list of questions. It's an assessment tool. You have to do it online. There's a bunch of questions, and they ask similar questions to be able to see how concretely you will arrive at similar responses, so that you're not saying I'm doing X in one situation and then you're doing something really different in a different situation. So you might get some questions coming up a few times. And as you're doing it, even then, sometimes I've heard in my debriefs with clients, people say, wow, it really got me thinking on what do I mean by that? Or how do I do that? Or how do I express myself? So that process alone of taking an assessment can be an aha moment in itself. The DISC assessment is the DISC stands for DISC. And I'm going to share this little page of the overview of DISC. It's a nice, colorful tool. Happy to share it in any links that are possible. And there's four basic styles. And one of the things to keep in mind with this tool is it's the reminder that there is no single style that is better or takes priority or works harder or gets to success faster. It's an acknowledgement of the particular style that we have, the strengths, the gaps, potential, or blind spots that we might have as a result of that. And the reason that I like the tool is that the response that you get also provides you with some exercises to develop those areas that you might want to be working on and think about ways that you can integrate it into your workplace. And so I'll give you an example. The DISC, the D stands for dominance. Those who are in that personality style value getting immediate results, taking action, challenging themselves and others. They're motivated by power and authority, by competition, by winning, and by success. So, as I say that, think about whether or not that reflects your own style or people that you might know and work with. On the I side, little I, is influence. And the values that those who are in that style have are expressing enthusiasm, taking action, encouraging collaboration. They value, are motivated by social recognition, by group activities, by friendly relationships. I'm only smiling because I'm an IS, and I'll get to what the IS is. And that's kind of, as soon as I see it, I hear it, and I think, yep, that's definitely me. The S is,
I
what's
was
that?
going to say, Gina, it's in your title, Chief Enthusiasm Officer. It's
I
like you are the eye.
never thought about it, but you're right. When I put down Chief Enthusiasm Officer, I wasn't thinking this, but it's what comes naturally, what came to me. So thank you for pointing that out. Absolutely. And then the steadiness, because I'm an IS, so there's a bit of steadiness in me as well, which values giving support. We're coaches, that's not surprising. Maintaining stability and enjoying collaboration. So again, not a surprise in some of these things. Motivated by stable environments, sincere appreciation, cooperation, and opportunities to help. And in the conscientious, the C part of that values ensuring accuracy, maintaining stability, challenging assumptions, and are motivated by opportunities to use expertise or to gain knowledge, attention to quality. And Sandra, do you remember? Because I was, I think you had, I think you're a C, if I'm not mistaken. Is that
I
right?
see, and then an S.
High C. And so, again, the collaboration that we have and that we've had since the past year demonstrates that. And one of the things that's beautiful about this is that, first of all, you get to see some of the things that you're motivated by. The part that I didn't read to you with these assessments is that it also helps you identify some of the things that They use the language of what you fear. So I'll give you an example. The person who gets immediate results, the one who's in a dominant personality trait, who challenges themselves and others, who gets immediate results, some of the things that they fear is loss of control or being taken advantage of or vulnerability. And that might be why they respond or react in a particular way. For influencing and steadiness, I'll give you each of the fears as well. For fear, social rejection, disapproval, loss of influence, being ignored. And we've had this conversation. There are times when you think, oh my gosh, I'm insignificant. That's something that sometimes comes up. And how do you cope with that? How do you deal with that? For steadiness, loss of stability, change. I've always had to get comfortable with change. And so this is something that I've always worked on. Loss of harmony. I'm a Libra as well. So that's a combination here for sure. And offending others. And I'm going to come back to how this has been helpful for me to know what that fear is. For conscientiousness, and think about this for yourself, Sandra, and for others who might be listening, criticism, slipshod methods, and being wrong. So I'll give you an example where my fear has been something that I've had to, and it comes up with clients, but this was for an aha moment for me, Sandra, when I had done this a little while ago. The fear of loss of harmony and offending others. I realized that when I was a manager, one of the things that I hated to do was performance reviews. I hated to have to sit down with a colleague or a staff member and go through their performance and give that difficult conversation, have the difficult conversation of, you did really great with this. I love that. That's that's the enthusiastic part. But then to say, there were some disappointing elements in A, B, or C, and this is how we might think about you working on it. I can say that now. But it was really a challenge for me to get to the point where I had to build on that skill. First of all, recognizing that it's one of those things I don't like doing, the aha moment, and then building on that skill and as part of my work so that A, I could help others improve and succeed as well, and B, get over that fear and build a skill in my own self that I could move forward with as well. And I've seen it with clients when they read this assessment and they see, the values, yep, they usually do the right on, yep, values motivated by, those are agreeable. And then they see the fears and they kind of went, oh, or the limitations. And they think, yeah, I guess that's something that sounds right. And what do I do with it? So this tool helps you sort of find ways to deal with it. It also helps. And I loved about this is that one of the tool's benefits is that, if you know, so for example, you and I work together, if I know that you are a C, and there's something that we're coming up against that we're approaching differently. There's no right or wrong, just the recognition that we're going to approach it differently. And based on our strengths and our motivators, what might we find a different way forward? And when I've had clients talk about, usually it's with challenging either bosses or if they've got team members that something's going astray. And when we put it in the context of, look, these are all valuable characteristics that we all have. You just have a different way of looking at something. Find a different way to move forward so that you can both reach the resolution that you ultimately want to. And that becomes one of the aha moments. I don't know if you had any experience with the DISC assessment and any thoughts on that, Sandra.
Actually, you just described my favorite part of it. Really, my favorite part of this, and I have not been trained in it, but I had one experience with it with a client, with a consultant who was trained years ago and loved it. And my favorite part is that it helps you to understand how somebody else ticks. And so instead of avoiding the conflict, which a lot of office environments end up doing this, right? Oh, I don't want to piss off that person, or I don't want to get into that same old argument or hear that same old excuse or whatever it is. So we're just going to not go there. We'll work in our silos and we'll be fine. No, you're not fine. You're not fine. Okay?
You're just covering it up.
Right. And so instead of doing that, gain a little bit of insight into how the other person works, so that you can have a productive conflict.
You just, it's funny, not in terms of conflicts, but it was really, I remember being in a group environment. I wasn't leading this facilitation, but being in a group environment where we had all done our DISC assessments. And one of the things that's available is to see a map, and it was a workplace environment. And there had always been this grumbling of people feeling that one or two people seem to just do things really differently. And then when you saw this map, because what the disk profile does is give you a dot. It shows you sort of where you are in a DI, S, and C. And so each person in the organization, in this organization, their dots were put up on a screen, and it was interesting to understand what was happening with the dynamics. Three quarters or four fifths of the group were very similarly clustered and thought very similarly. There was one person, two, who were really quite on the opposite. So they were D's versus the S's, for example. No wonder there was conflict, Sandra. Like if you have everybody congregating around one type of personality trait and way of approaching things, and another person who happened to be a leader of the group thinking things very differently, that's going to cause some friction. And even just by visualizing that, we talk about aha moments, and I'd forgotten about that one. Just visualizing it and seeing it, oh, okay, now we get it. They really do approach things differently. And then the leader was kind of like, oh gosh, all of you are approaching things that differently. No wonder we're bumping up against one another. That was really powerful.
And what did you do with that? I mean, there's this theory about diversity, diverse teams, they're more effective. So instead of having everybody that would all land and cluster on that on that chart, having them sort of spread around in terms of their communication styles, their personalities, their management styles, that would be a more effective team. So when you see that pie chart, what did you do with it?
There's a couple of things. So first of all, a leader has to be prepared to accept and do something about it. And a couple of things. One is even just that acknowledgement. One of the benefits of the tool is just that recognition. Let's start talking about how we approach things differently, number one. So with the leader and the other person who were sort of on this side and everybody else was on this side, that acknowledgement changed the conversation. So helping to facilitate the conversations is really important. But you're absolutely right. One of the things that happened is that leader realized, oh, I've been hiring, interestingly, people who are very different from me, but they're all very similar to one another. We need a few more people from, so it helps in terms of the planning. If you're a leader who is thinking about who to bring onto the team, well, maybe you need a few people who are more who are more motivated by attention to quality or detail, for example, bringing more people in to support that element of the work, depending on what the work of the group is really critical. And I think that's a really useful part of this tool for sure.
That is such a great explanation of how to use this tool for better business. And I've done something with a coachee once where they were getting ready to hire.
So the client, for just for those who
Yeah,
are watching, coachee
right.
clients.
And she was getting ready to hire, and she was putting together, the job profile and the interview scripts and the whole plan. And when she laid out the skills, okay, this is what we're looking for, it seemed like, oh, that's a good plan. And then I said, why don't we do a bit of a gap analysis in terms of the styles? And then it became clear that that was not the right list because they were missing something very important, which was somebody who actually was able to be accountable with respect to money, interested in money, motivated by money. And everybody else was like, no, I'm not. Okay, that's fine for you, but if everybody on our team is not motivated by money, well, then you're going to run into some issues. And nobody's watching the metrics with respect to profit. Nobody's managing the scope of work with respect to the clients and telling them, hey, we're out of time. This is we have to talk about a new scope of work. Nobody's doing that.
It's important just to notice that and to be able to bring on the right talent. And I think you use the example of using it for job descriptions. I think that's also powerful as well. Yeah, just being able to think about what those gaps are and what the actual needs are. And even in interviews, it comes up in so many different ways as people are preparing for interviews, being able to think about, all right, what do I really, really like to do? And as I said, I might not be very comfortable with that conflict, or I want the harmony, for example, doesn't mean that I can't stretch. And so sometimes when you're thinking about these things, it doesn't mean that I can't stretch. It's just being aware that this is a blind spot that I might have or a gap that I might have. How can I stretch it so that I can do the job that I need to do? Sometimes, though, if you don't like money and you're never going to be interested in money or the accounting, forget it. It might not be the right role for you. What about you? What are some of the tools, Sandra, that you like to use in particular as well?
Okay, so I am doing positive intelligence. I'm a positive intelligence coach, and I'm working on getting certified. This is the book for the program, and I'm really excited about it. So thanks for asking. I'll do the explainer. Okay, so basically, this program creates a framework for us to understand the mind better. And in simplistic terms, there is the inner sage, which, that's the part of us when we're calm, we're not feeling threatened, we're feeling loving, compassionate, creative, playful, all those sort of more lighter, happier feelings. And then there's the other side of the brain, which is the inner critic, the one that yells at us. You're too slow. You didn't get back to this person. You failed. You're like, no, you're gonna fail. Don't even try.
And
The
we
inner
all
critic.
have those, right? We all
We
have those inner
all have
critics.
it. And they sound different in one person's mind from another person's mind. And some it's going to be haughty and quiet, but it's still the inner critic. And so all day long we bounce from the sage to the critic, all day long, bouncing, bouncing, bouncing. And this program helps us to stay longer in the sage. Come back faster from the inner critic so we don't linger there. And the longer that we linger there, the more we marinate in these difficult feelings, the harder it becomes to rescue ourselves.
I love the word marinate. I'm just sitting in the word marinate that you had, but you're right. Sometimes marinating is good, but when you're marinating in the inner critic, or in the self-critic, absolutely not.
Right, because the thing is, if you're marin, I love marinating too. I think it's a very apt metaphor, because when you're marinating, it's actually literally going into the liquid, right? It's there. You can't just wake up and say, "Oh, now I realize what I was doing. I'll stop." Oh no, you're toast, because your whole body is soaking in this negativity, and it's going to take some time for it to get out of your system. So the trick is to catch it early or to get ahead of it and say, I know today I have these three things on my calendar that are going to trigger me. What can I do to stay in a centered place so that I don't add to the heated emotions, so that I am the one that helps people to remain calm and make good decisions? Get ahead of it.
And apart from identifying, because I think once you identify what your inner critics are in the coaching program that I did, and a lot of my clients will oftentimes hear, and then I love when they we talk about aha moments. I love when they actually start using the language. I'll talk about saboteurs, right? The saboteurs, and whether they're linked with the self critics that the inner critics that you've talked about. But when we identify what that saboteur is for a client, and because they haven't really thought about it, and then they see what that possible what is that voice that is, or that messaging that's constant on repeat that is telling you that you can't, you shouldn't, you won't? And we often say, give it another job to do. Go put it somewhere on the shelf. Let it do something else while your sage comes out and while you get along, get ahead with the work that you have to do. But identifying, first of all, is really, really important. Like anything, that awareness, that self-awareness, right? That's a big aha moment. But then what do you do? How do you, for example, with the knowledge of who your inner critics are, how do you bring that sage closer to you and more often and more frequently?
I can tell from the question how well you understand this. This is a very educated question. Thanks, Tina. So part of the work is in interrupting the mind pattern throughout the day, rather than saying, oh, I'll start my day off with a 5 minutes of quiet, and do that. Start your day off with the 5 minutes of quiet, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, whatever you can do. But that's not enough, because the mind will return to the negative thinking. It's just the way the mind is built. It's not your fault. It's not my fault. It's not anyone's fault. It's just built that way. And so if you let it go the whole day until the next morning, it's just going to keep bouncing back to the inner critic. And really, the trick is to keep catching it, even for very small increments. So what we do is we practice strengthening the mental muscles 2 minutes at a time, as frequently as you can during the day. And so I try every few hours, every hour if I can, 2 minutes. And an example of doing that, you bring your two fingers together. It's just an example. And bring your attention to the sensation of the fingers rubbing to the point where you notice the ridges. So your body's calming down because all your attention is on a physical sensation. You can't have negative thoughts while you're doing this.
That's an, I'm literally just, I can feel the ridges. I remember when I first tried that, Sandra, I thought, no, you can't. What are you talking about feeling the ridges? You literally can, and you cannot then. It's creating a new pathway in your mind. It's really creating a new pathway of thinking in your mind and being able to short circuit the other messaging and allowing yourself to inject some different, more positive messages into your brain and letting your brain think differently. We get so overwhelmed by the negative messaging, and negative is far more powerful than positive. There's scientific evidence that sort of has shown that. We need to give ourselves more positive experiences to be able to counter one negative experience alone. And that being able to do it throughout the day is so really incredible for for anybody who engages in it.
Right. And as you said it so well, Gina, this is about strengthening those roots in our neural pathways so that because the ones that are strong right now, it's like a road, the road that's well worn by the tires. Those are the ones that are habits that we've had our whole lives. And so our automatic thinking, automatic neural, we'll use the neural pathways that we've used. So to strengthen the positive, you have to do it on purpose like this. Keep interrupting the negative until you hit a tipping point. And when you hit the tipping point, then you have more sage than negative. And then it just becomes easier. But it's a process. It takes a lot of discipline.
And that's where a coach can also support the client as they're going through it to, number one, just remind the client that it does take time, and it does, and you're gonna mess up sometimes. You're gonna forget to do it every 4 hours, right? But being able to have that accountability and that stability and that encouragement from a coach, is that some of the things that you would offer to your clients as you're going through this?
Yes, and to go deeper into understanding the mind. So I gave it a very quick introduction, but I'll just go one step further so there's some curiosity about it. So the inner critic, and I know you know this already, Gina, but you can ask me so we can talk about an example.
Yeah. What if I'm one of your clients? How would you explain it to one of your clients who's never heard of this before?
So you have the inner critic. And the inner critic is composed of basically the judge, which is the ringleader, the boss. And then there are nine saboteurs. We all have them to some extent, but typically one, two, or three of them are louder for each of us. And what does that mean? That means when you're not in stress mode, they appear as your personality. So examples, people pleaser, hello, it's me.
That's the third one in line.
And just to understand how this works between the two sides of the mind, it's not a bad thing to be a people pleaser because pe somebody who has that in their personality, they're good at doing this, what we're doing right now. We're good at connecting with people, we're good at empathizing, we're good at understanding other people's needs and supporting others. Frankly, that's why we're coaches. We're good at this. Right? So when we're not in stress mode, it's an asset. But when we're in stress mode, then we start losing our boundaries. We start doing things because we feel obliged as opposed to feeling like it's the right thing. We lose our intention. And then we get exhausted. This is where burnout comes from. It's from losing track of why we're doing something. So if you catch yourself and you say, I am not in sage mode, let me do more 2 minutes of practice, I know I have a high pleaser inside me. I see it coming up now because I'm having this in interaction with Aunt Sally. I don't have an Aunt Sally, but Aunt Sally is triggering me. And I know it's the pleaser, and I'm going to return to my sage, and I'm going to choose a better way to respond to this. And if that means that I need to buy time, I'm going to ask politely for some time. But it's being in that sage mode that will allow me to shift my
It's
reaction.
some people will say, as they're listening to you, Sandra, talk about this, it's a bit of a mindfulness exercise, being able to come to the moment. And it is, but it's, first of all, you're giving them a tool and some words and language to be able to understand it. And I loved how you also said these saboteurs aren't necessarily bad. They're not, they're there to, they're there to help you and to protect you in some instances, except when you get into stress mode and then they sort of attack you. And it's, we've all, I know that we want to leave COVID behind, but the reminder to us that sometimes our own immune system, when it's trying to protect you against viruses, can get into hyper mode and actually cause more damage than good. And that's what kind of these saboteurs are. They're there to protect us, but when they're in hyper mode, when you're stressed, they can really cause more damage. And you said it, burnout is one of the things that we see. So I'm an avoider. Let me ask you that. One of high avoider. What would that look like? And what would I need to do if I, as an avoider, I had to laugh because it's sort of really high on that scale. So can you tell me a little bit about that? As I'm getting my results as your client and I get the avoider decision. What do you think I should be looking at?
Okay, and I've worked with a lot of avoiders, by the way, Gina. You're in
I'm
very
not
good
alone.
company.
Thank you. Okay. The people pleaser in me says thank you.
And us laughing, by the way, like this, that's sage.
Yeah.
We're in sage talking about the saboteur. It's still sage. And so, and I know that you like bringing the sense of humor to these conversations, Gina, and I do think that's really so wise. So the avoider, when the avoider is not in stress mode, the avoider has the skill of seeing things way ahead, far in the distance that could become a problem, an obstacle, or a risk, a threat. And they're able to see that, which other people may not have noticed and could walk right into this big problem when they're not in stress mode. That's great. That's an asset. When they're in stress mode, they start to be non-responsive, shut down, right? You're not getting the email back that you were expecting. You're not getting that phone call, or they're not starting a project.
Yep.
So they're just, and so what is really happening is they're all worried, oh, that client's already mad at me. And everyone reacts differently with their saboteur. So I'm not suggesting that this is how your avoider shows up. Everyone's avoider shows up differently. So it could be, oh, this client's already mad at me. I can't deal with that. I have to get it done before I call them. So then it becomes this all or nothing and this fear. And the saboteurs, they work together. So if you're a pleaser and an avoider, now you're like, oh no, they're going to reject me. I better avoid that phone call until I have it perfect.
That sounds about right sometimes.
And so when you get yourself back into sage mode, you're able to understand that actually is making the problem worse. And you're able to sort of calm down, bring yourself back to a centered place, and come up with a better plan, even if it's a very small step of, writing someone an email and saying, I got your message. I'm behind because we had a family emergency. I will do my best to get to it this weekend. Let's have a call on Monday. Okay, now the person feels like you didn't ignore them. They know it's late, but they're going to be feeling better about your relationship and more trust in your services. And that's from calming down the avoider.
There's a lot to be done to calm down these saboteurs, right? And I think when you see it, when you've had a client, because I, as you were describing it, there were times when those that avoider tendency is very strong. Being able to shift and take that moment to be able to do something other than what my initial reaction is going to be is really powerful sometimes. And that comes up in a lot of things that we deal with when we're talking about interpersonal relationships, in terms of decisions about positions or jobs or moving forward with things, in terms of our, even our, you deal a lot with business development, our ideas about business development. These saboteurs can have a huge impact on what we decide to do, when to do it, and when not to do it sometimes.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that that interaction with other people, just the way you were describing with DISC, is a big part of what is wonderful about positive intelligence too. Because when you understand how you work, you understand better how other people work. And it's a very simple system, so you can very clearly start to see, oh, I can see this person's controller is acting up, which isn't that different from the D in DISC, right? And so, what would be a sage response to that when somebody starts to recognize this is happening and comes back to a centered place, 2 minutes doing this, and then maybe instead of judging them and saying, that person, all they do is yell at me, or all they do is, make everybody stressed out, maybe you have a sage response and you say, I think I know what to do to help them. I'm going to go and offer to take that one thing off their desk because I can see that they're in stress mode.
Sandra, when as you're describing both these two tools that we use, it reminds me of another tool that I've used in coaching that I had learned about years ago, and I sometimes do it now. And it really is about perspective. You used it in the context of positive intelligence, and I've talked about it in terms of DISC being able to see the other person and recognize that it's not right or wrong, good or bad. It just is. And how do you deal with it? How do you find other ways of dealing with it? There's an exercise, a perspectives exercise that I've had some clients do, and I was doing coaching by phone before we were doing Zoom. And so doing this by phone is one thing. Doing it by Zoom is a different experience, where you ask the person, what's the perspective that you have? I'll give you one that can come up. For example, I hate networking. Networking is bad. Networking is disgusting. Networking is dirty. That's one that I hear frequently from a number of professionals. And so that's one perspective that you can have. And I literally get people out of their chair to take a position wherever they are, in assuming they can, they're in a place where they can move around, actually go to one place in the part of the room, in the corner, one left corner, and feel what that looks like. Feel what that identify what that looks like. So tell me, when you say that networking is dirty, what's that feel like? Where do you feel networking being dirty in you? What elements of that come up? And then I'll say to them, so what's another perspective you can take? Sure, you say that networking is dirty or disgusting. What's another perspective? And they can come up with, networking is a requirement. Okay, it's a shift. It's a little bit different. It's not dirty, but it's a requirement. Move to the other side of the room. So see it from that, actually physically change your positioning to get a different perspective on this theme or this topic. And then we'll go through that exercise from that perspective. And then I'll say, what's another way of looking at it? And then they'll come up, networking can be fun. Okay, let's go into the corner where it's fun, whatever that is. And we'll describe that. And we'll usually do four perspectives. And they'll literally be moving around the room to do this. And I'll ask them to go back to each room, to each spot, and ask them where it feels that they want to end up. Where do they feel like they want to be? And they'll typically choose one of those four. Sometimes it's in the middle, in between a couple of perspectives. They'll walk to that area. And part of this tool is not only to get them to see the different perspectives, but then if you really, really feel like you want to take on that new lens, that new perspective, and shift your own vision of something, getting them to sort of commit to that new perspective. It's that habit that you talked about, right? Changing the way that you see something, committing to it, and identifying one or two things that they can do to actually commit. And this might sound corny. A few of my clients have said, I'm not going to do it, but then we actually do it. They'll actually take a step and do a sort of, I'm moving into this new perspective. I had that perspective that networking was yucky or dirty or whatnot. I now want to own this perspective that networking is a growth opportunity. for example, if that's the fourth one, and they'll actually commit to it and take a step to move forward. That can be really powerful, and that's another tool, right? Because you're getting people out of their chairs and engaging whole body in thinking through something in a different way than what they are perhaps used to thinking of it. Let me get, I'm trying to get your reaction, Sandra. I'm curious
That
what
is so fun. I love
you
that you
think.
shared this with me. And I think I'll try it. Like, I mean, on myself.
Literally
And
getting up.
yeah, no, it's fun. And I do believe that there's a body element to our beliefs and our values and our behavior. It's not just changing the way your mind works. Yeah, that's a fun story. And you know, I like how it makes your beliefs less solid. When you get them to just play with you, like, you know, what could it, well, what else could it be? And then all of a sudden, those things that are so rigid inside, they start to just feel a bit more malleable. Like,
No, it's so true because people, when you allow people the thought, you've held on to a thought for so long,
yeah.
right? And this is the way it's got to be this way because I've always thought of it this way. And all of a sudden you're giving them a different possibility. And it's one of the things that we talk about. It can be creative, it can be productive, it's moving forward. They're coming up with the words that, and then they're trying it on, right? You're trying it on for size to see how it fits. And you realize if I don't like that, I have the opportunity to actually change the way I feel about something by changing the messaging in my mind about it. And it really can be impactful. We've had some, when I've worked on this, there's some really creative things. If people get stuck, for example, on, I don't know, I've got three words, I don't know what else networking is. And I'll say, okay, what are you looking at right now? And say, I don't know, my computer. Okay. So take on networking as computer. What does that mean? And sometimes we go down crazy roads, like really interesting roads. But I'll tell you, sometimes like I like that perspective. At the end of the day, they might come away with that last one, which they never expected, and want to start owning that. And it's that messaging that changes. And then that from the messaging, the behavior changes as well.
That's fun. I feel like we could talk so long about that. It's
I just looked
so
the time. Oh
interesting.
no. Well, the
Okay.
coaching, right? Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
Okay. I want to ask you about one more tool. So you told me that you also use Wheel of Life exercise. Please tell us a little bit about it and
I'm gonna quickly show it. It's
sure.
literally a pie or a pizza wheel, and in it does the following. It's broken down into eight areas because whether you're coaching, I tend to coach on career aspects, but we all know that we're not a single thing. We're not a single part of our life, and so this wheel has eight different elements: the physical environment, career, family and friends, significant other or romance, fun and recreation, health, money, and personal growth. And it's almost like a pulse check on where you are in all of those eight areas on a given day. And we know that that can change. But one of the things that I really like doing with this Wheel of Life is you ask the person, the client, where they're at on that particular day. And I always put the date on because 2 months later, when we come back to it, we see what's changed for them. On a scale of 0 to 10, today, where are you? How do you feel about your family and friends? Or how do you feel about your career? And you'll tell me a number. And the question that will come after that is, all right, so if you're at a three right now, why is that a three? And the real question is, how do you get to a 10? What does a 10 look like? Or a nine? Or even just get from a three to a seven for that matter. What do you need to do to get from that three to that seven? What's standing in your way? And what do you need to do? That has had quite a few aha moments. And what I really love about it, Sandra, is when we come back to it a couple of months later and we'll redo it, sometimes they're still stuck in one part of that wheel, but other parts have changed and that's helped them move forward. Part of the Wheel of Life is also the reminder that life is kind of rocky and you're going to get some threes and some fives and some tens and some eights. And if you're feeling like things are a little bit rocky, it's because there are different parts of our world that are maybe not as satisfying as we want them to be. But always thinking about, all right, what do we do? What can we do to shift something in that pizza pie or in that wheel? Does that explain it in the way that you hope that you can
Yeah,
explain it? Yeah.
it does. It's very visual. I love that you're giving people hope.
Yeah.
You know, in areas of their life that I think that a lot of us just accept. This is just the way it is. This is just the way it's going to be, and I need to get used to it. You know, because things continue in a certain way for years. And then if you ask them the question, okay, well, what would it take? All of a sudden, the creativity starts happening. And then it's impossible to not come up with ideas.
That's the part that I really love with our clients is that when you ask that one, we'll talk about powerful questions very, very briefly, but that is a powerful question. What will it take to move you to a nine or an eight for that matter? And it gets people thinking. And in some instances, initially, the power of the pause, right? Initially, they're not sure. I'm at a four right now. I'm at a five right now. Nothing can change. Okay, let's think about that. Why can't it change? I don't like why questions, but what is it that's standing in your way of change? And sometimes, if you really have no answer about it, coming back to it at the other end, once you've talked about some of the other components, really helps you move. But being able to ask that question of what one step do you need to take to move you? If you're not happy with where you're at, if it's a three and a four, and that means that you're not satisfied, then what do you need to do to make it a little bit better? And it doesn't have to be a 10 right away, Sandra. Over time, you can get towards there, but it gives them hope and it also gives them something concrete. I find that that's important as a coach too, to work with tangible possibilities as well.
Yeah. So if you have an action item, even action items give you hope.
Right?
Yeah. And I love that you can even do this on things that are already going well. Like, if you give something an eight, well, why is it only an eight?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I don't like thinking of the 10. I'm not a fan at all of perfection. 10 is not perfect because sometimes people have said they're at a 10 and say, but I can still see something. I'm really satisfied with that. But if it were looking a little bit different. So it always looks to see where are you, because the whole part is it, the level of satisfaction with these areas in your life. And I think the other part of this is the reminder that one part or two parts can impact others. Whenever people come to me for career coaching and they say, okay, we're going to talk about our job. And then if I start asking questions about when was the last time you had fun? What? Well, what's that got to do with it? Well, you're saying you're not enjoying yourself in your work, but I'm just curious, where have you had fun in other aspects? People sometimes forget that we're not just one-dimensional. There's so many different aspects that form who we are, right?
Absolutely. And just entering into these types of coaching scenarios with an open mind may lead you to sort of a happy outcome in an area where you didn't start. Because people don't always know what is the thing they need to work on first.
And I'll say this, and I'm the chief enthusiasm officer, as you said, but sometimes it's not necessarily finding a happier place. Sometimes that satisfaction comes. You can find something quite challenging, but a bit more satisfying. And sometimes it's also being able to get past those really difficult roadblocks. Some of the toughest, most challenging conversations I've had with clients is when I have just been with them or sat with them as they have been with a very difficult, an aha moment that has sort of, oh, it's not a happy moment necessarily, but it's one of those, oh gosh, that's why that's happening, or that's why this is going on, or that's why I'm experiencing this. And just allowing that space, creating that vessel to feel that emotion for a few minutes and not have to do anything, but just be in that recognition of, ah, that's really been holding me back, is really kind of powerful. So yeah, I'd love to have people smile and laugh, of course, but sometimes just being there and having that ability to let them be in whatever emotion comes up. That's one of the challenging parts that I find, given my personality, as we talked about, for being a coach, but one of the most rewarding as well, being able to sit with a person wherever they might be.
Yeah, what you're describing is acceptance. Acceptance of yourself, others, whatever is going on. And having, the ability to accept something is a giant relief. Because we fight our feelings, we fight our bodies, we fight our circumstances, we fight everything all day long. But to just accept it and say, you know what, this is what it is, and maybe that's okay. I'll do these things, you know, tomorrow, or I'll do these things to change this, you know, this way I handle it. But maybe right now it's okay.
Yeah. Being okay is okay. Absolutely.
Being okay is okay. And is there anything you want to say, Gina? So we also did talk about discussing deep questioning. Is there anything you want to say about that?
I'm just going to give people an example. Like we already have given examples, right? Because
I know.
you wanted us to engage in storytelling. I think we've given examples of how we've done it. And I'm going to show this book very briefly. I'm a storyteller, right? So Spark Change was a book that somebody told me about, and the title is 108 Provocative Questions. Yes, it says for spiritual evolution, but I think it's just for personal and professional development. And the reason that I love this little book, it's not a huge book, is wherever you go, typically, whichever page you open, it just has one of those powerful questions. And sometimes I find that at the end of a coaching session, I'll throw out a question and I'll just say to the client, I want you to sit with that. It's sort of their homework between our meetings. And I'll find that it's not in the session that people have that aha moment, but when they sit back in those quiet moments, being able to reflect on what we've talked about, where they're at, and they're thinking about that question. I'll get an email 2 days later or a week later. Oh my God, you know what? ABCD, all these things came out for me. And Sandra, just to experience it, I'll open up this book here, and it says, what am I doing when I feel the most alive? Whew.
Wow.
Wow. That's question number six. Yeah. Question 70. I'm just going to leave it at that. What am I doing when I feel the most alive? I want people to think about that as they're listening to this and watching us, and take that away with them. Just think about that and write some notes if you want to, or just give some thought to that question. I think that's a really powerful question.
It's so powerful. We have to leave it on that high note. We can't. So, viewers, you have homework.
There we go. Think
And
about.
we want to hear about it. So tell us.
Yeah, absolutely. Would love to hear how they thought about that question and what answers they may have come up with. I love that.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much, Gina, for your time and your insights. I enjoyed this conversation so much.
So did I, Sandra. Thank you. And thanks for doing these podcasts. It's so wonderful to be able to, A, connect with you, and then be able to share that with others. And you're just a very gracious host as well. So thank you.
I really do enjoy it. And to our listeners, if you are interested in learning more about Gina Alexandris, please go to ginaalexandris.com. You've been listening to Get in the Driver's Seat, stories about leadership moments in small to mid-sized professional practices. I'm your host, Sandra Becor, practice management coach at Becor Management. Take care, everybody.